Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. Joining the Business and Leadership Forum, chaired by Kevin O'Malley, I am Ann Clark, co-chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Forum. I will be your chair for this evening's program. Harvey Rose, how does an independent analyst survive San Francisco's City Hall? Harvey does it, and with amazing skill, respect, and integrity. I first met Harvey years ago on the 28 bus on the way to a 49ers game at Candlestick. This is true. The only seat left on the bus was next to Harvey. And the talk was all about the city and politics. Before his long, and I never forgot, and every once in a while I still meet Harvey on the 28 bus going to a 49ers game. Before his long and distinguished career in San Francisco, Harvey also served the Auditor General of the State of California, supervising auditor for the Los Angeles region of the U.S. General Accounting Office. Before all that, he received his degree in accounting from the University of Miami. Harvey has never stopped telling it like it is, really telling it like it is. In a city known for its deals, we are lucky to have Harvey watching San Francisco's money and politics. Please welcome Harvey.
Thank you very much, Ann. I don't deserve all of that. Ladies and gentlemen, during my career, I have concentrated my audit efforts in the conducting of management audits in the public sector as compared to the conducting of traditional financial audits. And to best illustrate the management audit process, I thought that I would relate to you one of the first experiences that I had with such investigations. It was back in 1969. I was working for the city administrative officer in the city of Los Angeles, and we were undergoing a very severe recession at that time. As a matter of fact, engineers were driving taxi cabs, the Boeing situation in Seattle. The city of Los Angeles would have one custodial opening, and literally 5,000 people would apply for that one job. Well, my job at that time was to conduct a management audit of the Los Angeles Zoo. And the zoo had three gorillas, and one of the gorillas died. I'm serious. And now, I don't know if anybody has any concept of the cost of a full-grown gorilla. But at that time, I'm serious. At that time, it was $14,000 plus your food. Now, I know this sounds ridiculous, but because of the high unemployment, the city of Los Angeles actually hired a guy to dress up and impersonate a gorilla. It was a job. It was a job. And my job in conducting this management audit was to determine if this guy that was dressed up as a gorilla was operating the most efficient and effective manner. As a matter of fact, I will never forget it. I went to the zoo. It was on a Thursday morning. There were about 15 or 20 persons around the cage. I was accompanied by the animal keeper, and I swear, if it weren't for the animal keeper, I could not tell the difference between this guy that was dressed up as a gorilla and the two real gorillas. I mean, the guy was terrific. He was swinging like this. He's going like this. But all of a sudden, by accident, he swings over into the next cage, and there were three lions there. And the guy literally panics. He starts yelling something like, "Help, help." I'm looking at the animal keeper. I don't know if I should laugh or I should cry. I mean, it was funny on the one hand. It was tragic on the other hand. In any event, the guy is yelling, "Help, help." All of a sudden, one of the lions walks over to him, taps him on his shoulder, and says, "Shut up, stupid, or we'll both get fired." Kiki, can I quit while I'm ahead? It has never been more important for auditors to maintain their independence and to conduct and report the results of their work free from political interference. And regardless of the popularity or politics of the audit findings, independence and integrity are essential, even if it means taking heat sometimes, maybe even losing some clients, or maybe even losing your position. I say this based on my own experience, in which I have taken heat and have been fired, though I can honestly say that to my knowledge, I've never lost a client for being too independent. Speaking about getting fired, in 1975, I was fired by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee of the California Legislature from my position as the state of California's Auditor General because I refused to withdraw a report pertaining to a shortfall in the state surplus, a report which the chairman of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee said, quote, would embarrass the Democrats, end of quote. If my reports are factual, no one was going to force me to not issue a report, whether or not it was embarrassing to Democrats, to Republicans, or to anyone else. In my approximately two-year tenure in serving as the Auditor General of California, I was severely criticized by both former Governors Reagan and Jerry Brown, whom I am certain you know were at the opposite ends of the political spectrum. However, my reports are not written for purposes of pleasing anyone. The purpose of my reports are to report the truth. Following my termination in Sacramento, I was rehired as budget analyst by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, who viewed my standing up to and being fired by the state legislature as a favorable credential because the board members wanted an independent analyst to conduct management audits and budget analysis and to provide the board with ongoing evaluations of the city's fiscal situation. I stayed in that position until 1978, at which time we formed a private firm, Harvey M. Rose Associates, LLC, and contracted back with the Board of Supervisors to continue to serve as budget analysts. This contractual arrangement allowed our staff to grow by providing services to other public jurisdictions, in addition to our ongoing services for the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Harvey M. Rose Associates presently continues to serve as the contract budget analyst to the Board of Supervisors and also serves numerous other public sector clients throughout California and beyond. A budget analyst in serving the San Francisco Board of Supervisors or an auditor general in serving the California legislature must be independent in reporting the facts, regardless of where the chips might fall. I believe that independence, and I mean independence free of political interference, is essential in order to effectively discharge my duties and responsibilities as an auditor. Whatever I have accomplished during my career, nothing, and I emphasize nothing, has been more important to me than my maintaining total and complete independence in our reporting of the facts and making recommendations for purposes of realizing savings for taxpayers, including improved efficiencies and effectiveness. Since my work is concentrated in the public sector area to conduct management audits and budget analyses of governmental agencies, it is the taxpayers who ultimately pay for the services of our firm. I believe that I have an obligation to the taxpayers to be totally honest, objective, and independent in fulfilling my assignments. Where does this principle and its importance come from? I would say it's important to me personally and always has been, but in a more formal sense, as a member of the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, I fully subscribe to the government auditing standards of the United States Comptroller General, which state, and I quote, in all matters relating to the audit work, the audit organization and the individual auditors, whether government or public, should be free from personal and external impairments to independence, should be organizationally independent, and should maintain an independent attitude and appearance, end of quote. Independence, as I define it, does not mean disregarding the policies and procedures of your superiors, but it does mean being able to conduct audits free of political interference. Management audits, also known as operational performance or program results audits, may briefly be defined as an independent, systematic evaluation of an agency's operations in order to determine the extent to which resources are being used in the most efficient, effective, and economical manner. Improvements resulting from the management audit can be measured in terms of increased services, higher quality services, and reduced unit costs. hard-hitting management audits, which are conducted by auditors who at all times maintain their professional independence and objectivity, are the only real way to find out where the waste and inefficiencies in government exist. The discovery of waste or inefficiencies through the management audit process can be embarrassing. While our objective in conducting these audits is not to embarrass government officials, on the other hand, if the auditor is to determine where the waste is in order to save money for the taxpayers, then he or she must report the facts regardless of where the chips might fall. A frequent response to a question asked during a management audit is, quote, "Why should I change my procedures now? That's the way it's been done for the past 20 years. That kind of response often indicates that an agency or organization has fallen behind the times and is no longer providing services in the most efficient and economical way possible. But perhaps the most significant question to ask to the officials directly involved in the government program is, if they were running the agency as their own business, would they maintain the existing staff? And would their procedures be the same? It's true that government is not in the business of making a profit, but who can argue against government being run in the least costly manner possible? The most important thing in investigating government agencies, in order for us to be able to get the facts and to do the job and to make recommendations which are feasible and to affect economies, is for the policymakers and the elected officials to permit us the independence to operate in an open atmosphere with no strings. I am proud of our firm's record of independence in auditing. This record is based on my own personal standards of independence and objectivity, and there are times when independent and objective auditors attract a lot of heat. In some instances, our firm and our reports have been attacked and criticized, but the facts contained in our reports have not been refuted. Our management audit findings and recommendations are specific and save money. I want to give you one example of one of the audit findings disclosed in our management audit report submitted to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors pertaining to City and County of San Francisco departments and agencies. I believe that this audit finding illustrates why our recommendations sometimes do not win popularity contests with the audit department, and why independence in auditing is so critical. In our first management audit of San Francisco's Public Utilities Commission, we disclosed that the Public Utilities Commission entered into 10-year long-term fixed-rate contracts with the Modesto and Turlock Irrigation Districts to sell the city's Hetch Hetchy's hydroelectric power to these districts. We found that there were no provisions in these contracts to increase the power rates to the prevailing market rate during the entire 10-year contract period. As a result, the city and county of San Francisco lost over $27 million annually of additional revenues, and ironically, the Modesto and Turlock irrigation districts turned around and resold the power at a profit of $10.5 million annually. In fact, the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission was charging power rates to its own city and county of San Francisco departments housed in City Hall, which were higher than the rates that were being charged to the Modesto and Turlock irrigation districts under these long-term fixed-rate contracts. Now, the Board of Supervisors released our report, and the initial response to the press about our report from the then president of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission was that our report was, quote, irresponsible and unprofessional, end of quote. And he stated, quote, "I think what we're dealing with is somebody's term project paper," end of quote. The Public Utilities Commission official in charge of negotiating these contracts referred to our report as, quote, "the greatest job of Monday morning quarterbacking I have ever seen," end of quote. And the Public Utilities Commission general manager, together with the official in charge of negotiating the contracts, stated that such long-term fixed-rate contracts with no provisions to increase rates were, quote, standard, end of quote, throughout the industry. These are the comments that these officials made to the press. However, We found correspondence documenting that the Public Utilities Commission in charge of negotiating the contracts had themselves requested that a rate adjustment provision be incorporated into the contracts. Yet for some unknown reason, that provision was ultimately dropped from the final negotiated contracts. Now, we request written responses from the audited agencies to all of our management audit reports. The final written response of the Public Utilities Commission was, quote, obviously, the fact that the rate provision was deleted from the final contract was certainly not due to a lack of trying on the part of the Public Utilities Commission. This should end the analyst's unjust accusation on this point once and for all, end of quote. We do not permit agencies to talk out of both sides of their mouths. You can't respond initially to the press that it was, quote, standard, end of quote, not to have rate adjustment provisions in the contracts, and then subsequently respond in writing to our audit report by stating that, quote, we tried, end of quote, to have such a rate adjustment provision in the contracts. Now, you might wonder what real benefits result from such a hard-hitting audit finding if the auditor and the auditee wind up engaged in a heated public controversy. In this case, the benefit was quite direct. Contracts of this nature had never before been subject to the review and approval of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Based on our finding and the related recommendation, the Board of Supervisors submitted a charter amendment to the San Francisco electorate, requiring that all contracts of this nature in the future must be approved by the Board of Supervisors. The charter amendment was overwhelmingly approved by the San Francisco electorate. While some of our audit reports are quietly accepted by our clients, some receive considerable publicity. While we do not hold press conferences in an attempt to gain publicity for our audit reports, once the Board of Supervisors releases our reports, they become public documents. And in fact, the press has given some of our reports a lot of publicity, apparently because the press recognizes our independence and objectivity. Let me state for the record that many of our firm's management audits and other engagements go fairly smoothly, for which we receive quiet thanks and praise, even from auditees in some instances. One of Webster's definitions of recommendation is anything that makes a favorable or pleasing impression. I am certain that many of the recommendations that we have made have not resulted in a favorable or pleasing impression to the audited agencies. But I believe that an auditor can never forget that the objective of the audit is to report the facts in an independent manner in order to improve the operations of the agencies which we are auditing. Our objective is not to win popularity contests. As I view it, I am responsible for reporting the facts, even at the expense of making enemies, and even at the expense of reporting facts which some persons might not want to hear. In a sense, I, as a government agent, am the instrument of measuring cost efficiencies. Auditors, being highly trained, have perfected skills not only useful but vital to all of us if the human race is to avoid being buried by burgeoning bureaucracies and strangled by reels of red tape. But those skills, as finely honed as they are useless unless we are permitted to operate in an atmosphere of independence unchecked by political interests. It is imperative that auditors demand that independence, since intellectual truth and factual honesty must be the basis upon which our elected public officials make the vital decisions which affect us daily. As I previously indicated, as the 1974 State Auditor General, 1974, as a matter of fact, I am so old, I knew Baskin-Robbins when they only had two flavors. But seriously, as the 1974 State Auditor General, I was frequently accused by some Republicans of being under the control of the Democratic legislature. Then as the 1975 Auditor General, I was accused by some Democrats of issuing reports on behalf of Republicans. In my capacity of Auditor General, I was further accused of being naive in my relations with the California legislature. If attempting to disregard the politics and reporting the facts regardless of where the chips might fall, is being naive, then I plead guilty. When I was fired as the state's Auditor General, the California legislature awarded me a settlement agreement equal to back pay which was owed to me pursuant to my contract with the state. The then chairman of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, a former state senator who fired me, stated that the settlement was a, quote, nuisance settlement, end of quote. Webster's defines nuisance as, quote, a condition causing annoyance to the general public, end of quote. If the senator meant that my reporting the facts and my conveying the importance of independence to interested groups such as yourselves and my continuing to conduct management audits to achieve savings for taxpayers, if he meant that these things represent a nuisance, then let me assure you it is my intention to continue to be a nuisance. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes my prepared comments. I would now be happy to respond to any questions. And incidentally, if you need any zoo audits, don't hesitate to contact me.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program, and Harvey Rose, How Does an Independent Analyst Survive San Francisco City Hall? We have some absolutely wonderful questions. A couple of them are just kind of wow questions. So, Harvey, I hope you're ready for them. The two most popular ones, I think, have to do with the park surplus. We got a number of people asking about that. And here's, I think, what sums it up. How could the $50 million surplus remain hidden for so long in California Parks Department?
Very simple, because they didn't have a good independent budget analyst.
I think they want a little more answer
it's basically a lack of inadequate monitoring and review. And I'm serious that you need someone who is going to dig in there to find that kind of thing. It's inexcusable, but it happened.
Actually, there is a question. Would a good auditor be able to discover hidden funds, for example, the state parks?
I believe we could. With ongoing oversight and auditing and monitoring, I believe it could have been disclosed.
Okay. The second group that came in on one of our most popular discussion areas. I'm not going to say which side is popular. Here it is. How can an ordinary citizen bring your skills and integrity to evaluate programs such as the Central Subway? Is it the subway we call it? Where politics has kept the Board of Supervisors from requesting an audit?
Well, I was going to say there's two ways. One is, of course, you could go to the Board of Supervisors, any individual member. And if that member wanted to assign the budget analyst to conduct a management audit of the Central Subway, of course we would do it. The other way, it's interesting that back in, Steve, what year was that when we did the management audit of the Municipal Railway? About 1986 or 87, where a subject like this came up where the board did not assign us to do an audit, and there was a voter initiative. And it required that voter initiative won, again, overwhelmingly, and we did an audit of the Municipal Railway. So there is that option.
Okay. Could you please talk more about how the public sector human resources policy that often valued tenure over efficiency intersects with your audit findings? Don't these policies sometimes inhibit the ability or to implement fully the recommendations from your audits?
It does in us, from the standpoint that we are totally independent and we evaluate and call the shots just as they are. It is true that a civil service system does have some restrictions, and the departments themselves even have problems. Sometimes a department head, if they want to terminate a position, there's a problem in doing so. But we would report it. We could not do – it would be up to the Board of Supervisors or the administration to have a direct result on that kind of policy.
Interesting. That's good. Actually, this goes right into the second question, the next question. Are the San Francisco pension and retirement health benefits adequately funded? What is their long-term effect on San Francisco budgets?
The effect on the budgets is humongous, retirement system as well as the health benefits. And no, there is a huge unfunded liability, particularly with respect to the health service system. The Board of Supervisors, in fairness to the Board, has attempted, has submitted various charter amendments and made certain legislation that is definitely improving the situation, but there is still that problem. And this is not unique to San Francisco. As you know, it's across the state and it's across the country where pensions and health benefits have just run out of control.
Okay, this one says, taking off your non-partisan hat. As a seasoned observer of City Hall, what do you believe are the biggest challenges facing the city? What changes would you like to see as a resident of San Francisco?
Well, I would just like to see the mayor and the Board of Supervisors and the department heads operate in a straightforward, effective manner. I think generally that has occurred. There have been instances where certainly there have been problems, but I think that in general, public officials do try to do good things for the city and county of San Francisco. It does not always happen, and problems occur, and probably will occur in the future with or without a Harvey Rose type of auditor.
There are scores of nonprofits providing homeless services, all financed by the city. Are we getting our bang for the buck?
Well, that's a good question. We really have never, I don't think anyone has ever, including our own office, made a detailed analysis of the cost benefits related to the costs that are expended for the homeless and the benefits that are received. So that's a question that's really in the open, and until that kind of detailed evaluation was made, I don't think that question can be answered.
I actually didn't read the Chronicle, so someone in the audience is going to help me with this. It said today I didn't read it. Could you comment on the expensive delay to the improvements to the one park mentioned in today's Chronicle? Can this be corrected? But I don't know. Does anyone? Lafayette Park.
Just my brief reading of that. That's just a technicality in the law that really is not related to an audit or an evaluation. But apparently, and I read the same as you did, the law provides that if someone wants to protest or appeal a particular project, they can do it under the existing law, and that would require a change in the administrative codes of San Francisco, which the Board of Supervisors certainly could change.
So just one person can do that?
Yes, apparently.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I didn't know that. So thank you for the question. I don't know who that question came from. On what topic has the board and mayors most consistently failed to accept your point of view?
Well, let me think out loud. First of all, we do a budget once every year, and I would say somewhere in the area of 90% of our recommendations are implemented. And that money goes to the general fund, and the board can then reappropriate, and they do reappropriate those savings for other needed services. I would say generally we've had very good success in the implementation of our recommendations. When we found out that the airport in San Francisco had the lowest landing fees in the country and they owed the San Francisco General Fund $24 million, we recommended that the city get that money back from the airport, and we got it back. The Board of Supervisors imposed our recommendation. When we disclosed that the treasurer many years ago had over $1 million in savings in non-interest-bearing accounts, we said close those accounts and put that into interest-bearing accounts. And As a matter of fact, within 3 days after the Board of Supervisors had released our report, the San Francisco Examiner, I recall, had an editorial which said anyone that can sneeze at $1 million is an allergy that taxpayers can't afford. And that money was immediately closed. So by and large, once we get the assignment, we are successful in getting many of our recommendations implemented. I think the illustration, the person that asked the question about the subway system, if someone does not want an audit, then that's a problem. Then, of course, we can't do the audit.
Do you get involved with projects such as the new basketball stadium on the waterfront? I didn't even know there was a new basketball stadium. That's why I love these
yes,
meetings.
Yes, that kind of project will come to the Board of Supervisors, and we will have to review that project not only for fiscal feasibility but all of the costs and benefits related to the project. We did that, if you recall, years ago when Mayor Willie Brown proposed a stadium at Candlestick Park. In fact, that was a very controversial situation where the mall was going to, according to Mayor Brown and some members of the Board of Supervisors, was going to pay for the stadium and with no general fund monies. And we stated that there would be at least a $4 million hit to the general fund on an annual basis. That was a controversy. But those kinds of projects do all come before the Board of Supervisors and have to be reviewed by us.
What was the most contentious budget issue you have ever handled?
God, there's so many of them.
I was going to say, is there only one?
We're a seven.
We'll take as many as you want to offer.
I mean, we get into sometimes very protracted disagreements with departments when we find that, I mean, it's a matter of that if a position or a piece of equipment or materials and supplies, whatever it is not justified, we make the recommendation. And then if the department disagrees, we have to attempt to convince the board that we are correct. So it's just an ongoing, that kind of thing is an ongoing disagreement kind of thing.
Please comment on dealing with the current supervisors vis-a-vis the supervisors 10 years ago. Without mentioning any names.
My take on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors is this, is that whether it was 10 years ago or today, I have never been prohibited from operating in an independent manner. And I give credit to all the Boards of Supervisors for permitting me to have that independence. Do the Board of Supervisors always agree with me 10 years ago or today? No. But I think the most important thing is that we have the independence and we exercise that independence.
There are a couple of people who are asking the same question. I think they're worried. How long is your contract with the city? What will happen if the next auditor doesn't have your skills and integrity?
The present contract has 2 more years to go. And then it will be up to the board to determine whether or not, whatever their process is, to retain us or not. But I don't think that there's only one Harvey Rose out there, but we would like to think that when it comes to San Francisco budget and evaluations, we are unparalleled.
This question I'm not quite clear about, but let me ask it, and then if the writer wants to clarify it, I would certainly welcome that. It's, as we have recently seen with federal agencies like the Minerals Management Service and the General Services Administration, toxic cultures can perpetuate themselves until a large and damaging public scandal draws attention to them. What recommendations would you, in your experience, make to prevent such cultures from taking hold to begin with rather than simply catch them earlier?
Well, I think, with ongoing auditing, some of these extravagant parties could have never happened if the auditor said, wait a second, How could we be, when the budget is approved, how could we be spending $150,000 or $200,000 to send these people to Maui or wherever before that happens? And that can easily be ascertained through a budget analysis before the expenditures are made, because there has to be a budget in the first place in order to do that. So I think that can be stopped.
This one is also kind of how could it have been stopped? How could Bernie Madoff engage his crooked activity so successfully and for such a long period of time? Where were the auditors? Was there derelict, or were they on the take?
Well, that's a good one, because there is one person who, in fact, 7 or 8 years prior to the Madoff scandal, actually wrote 2 or 3 times to the Securities and Exchange Commission, and that person was ignored. I mean, that's just plain ridiculous. So that this person saw that anyone who could get returns like this were totally unrealistic. I mean, it just didn't make any sense. And there was one person who actually was right on top of it, and he was simply ignored.
Well, there's two here that kind of ask the same question, but let me ask them. First, the first one, who is in your position in state government, and could they make the same statement? I think about the statement about integrity and independence.
I don't know the personal by the people that are in office now. I can't think of their names, but there is a state auditor. They changed the name, I believe, from auditor general to state auditor. And there is a legislative analyst. And as a matter of fact, when I was auditor general, it was the legislative analyst. I'm sure you remember A. Allen Post, who was the person who actually culled the applications for my job at that time. So in a sense, I owe some of my being retained by the state to A. Allen Post.
Right. This is similar. Who does for the state of California what you did until you were fired? But there's a second part. What impact does the state budget have on your dealings with the San Francisco budget?
Well, it has a huge impact, first of all, on San Francisco, the state budget. But in terms of our responsibilities, whatever budget we get, we analyze whether or not there is sufficient or insufficient state funds, and if we find unjustified items in the budget, we review it. The mayor's office and the controller have more of a direct relationship with the state in terms of monitoring what is short from the state to the city.
Let's see. I'm trying to figure out. Okay, so I'm gonna go for it. If you smell a rat, can you initiate an audit? I don't know how to rephrase that in any other way. And what does where does a whistleblower go? Is the second part of the question. There's two questions.
Well, first of all, in San Francisco, we get all of our assignments from the Board of Supervisors. So that, again, our assignments have to be initiated. So we don't, even if we smell the rat, we can't initiate an audit. It's got to be voted upon by the Board of Supervisors. And then we do the audit. I don't know if that's responsive to the question, if someone wants to.
Could you ever, if you smelled the rat, quietly discuss that with the Board of Supervisors?
Well, absolutely, but we are overwhelmed in just fulfilling our assignments to do. We do the budget once a year. We do the management audits as assigned by the board. We do special projects for the board. Simply trying to keep up with that work does not give us sufficient time to smell the rat, so to speak.
Or the rabbit, right?
Or the rabbit.
Whatever we... What should we be most worried about in city government as residents of San Francisco? Boy, that's a loaded question. Most worried about. We'll stick with most worried about.
Well, I think you should certainly keep tabs on the budget to make sure that the budget is sound. And I must say that San Francisco's budget, unlike the state budget, every year must be balanced. That's a law, so that when we get the budget, it has to be balanced. But I would say certainly the budget is the most important piece of legislation that comes out of the out of San Francisco, in my judgment. I mean, we're talking about a $7.4 billion budget with I might add, 27,000 employees.
What do you think about eliminating the limit on condo conversions in San Francisco? Lots of tenants in common want to convert but cannot. Would you see a financial benefit to opening up conversions?
Well, the condo conversion, is really a policy matter. We really don't get involved in that. So I would not have a comment on that particular subject.
Do you ever ask the civil grand jury to look into an issue, and do you read and respond to the annual report of the grand jury, annual report on the grand jury report?
We do read the reports of the grand jury, but it's the grand jury. Normally, they'll contact our office as a someone that they want to interview, but we don't tell the grand jury what to do, and they don't tell us what to do.
What do you think is the greatest waste of money in San Francisco government?
I told you
there's some really good questions.
Excuse me.
When we do management audits, that's when we have findings showing the greatest waste of money. For example, in the specific example that I mentioned to you, can you imagine having a long-term fixed rate contract for 10 years without being able to go to the market and charge the market rate? That waste turned out to be $27 million a year to the city. So that's an example of what happens. But we don't know that until we are assigned to do the management audit.
Yeah, that makes sense. We had a request from the audience, and it says, could you please give the unasked question cards to the speaker and as a general policy for moderators? I can't speak for all the moderators because some of them here are from the club, such as myself, and some are moderators who come as part of the program. But I personally do give all of the question cards to the speakers. And the reason I personally do that is that I think it's really informative, personally for me to read them as I read them to you, and secondly for the person who's speaking to have them, because sometimes we don't get to all the questions. Today we actually have pretty much covered all of the issues that came up. But I think it's important. So whoever was concerned about that, I do want you to know that my personal perspective is, yes, it is very important. And the speakers are always, from my perspective, very appreciative of the fact that they get the question cards. It's something they can carry away from the program tonight and actually have time to look at and think about. So whoever made that comment, I just wanted to assure you that it does happen, and I'm very conscious about that being an important part of the program. I'm going to have to take a quick break now to inform our radio audience that they are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program and Harvey Rose, How Does an Independent Analyst Survive San Francisco City Hall? We have just a few more questions to go. I have the impression that you only audit what you are asked to audit. If the county supervisors don't want something looked at, the topic is never examined. Lots of dirt is never seen.
I think that's a good question. It's a good observation, and that's why I mentioned to you that, in fact, it's people like yourselves who have the authority to start an initiative to have the budget analyst or whoever you want do an audit of whatever you want. So there is that available situation. But I would comment that, yes, there's going to be many issues that we don't get into, that there's probably a lot of waste. But no matter what issue any member of the Board of Supervisors asks us to do, as long as that member of the Board of Supervisors does not interfere with our audit, the taxpayers are getting a good, solid, independent audit. So there is direct benefit, even though it was a supervisor who initiated the particular audit.
So in this case, would a person who has a concern have to go to an individual person on the Board of Supervisors to get it started? Would that be the route?
That is one way that is certainly available, that anybody could go to any member, your district supervisor or any supervisor, as far as that's concerned, to request that the budget analyst or whomever you want to do the audit. Absolutely.
Okay, great. We keep getting questions, Harvey. You're really popular. The city does business with private companies. Does the auditor have any access to these private companies?
We do audit various private contracts. We review contracts that come before the board on a continuing basis. Our evaluation is largely limited to an evaluation of whether or not the contract makes sense. Is it cost effective? Do we audit the actual books of the contractors? Generally, no.
Is there a way to cut down overtime costs in the police force? This is really, we could be here all night, Harvey, on this one. What are all the problems we still have with Muni and absenteeism?
First of all, on the overtime, there is a way. You have to have good supervisors who are or will absolutely not permit overtime unless it's necessary. We can report to the board, of course, on how much has been expended on overtime and whether or not they've gone over budget. But in terms of actually controlling overtime, that's got to be online. That's got to be the supervisors who are directly in charge of the people that are putting in the overtime. That's the only way you can control overtime, together with, of course, limiting the overtime amount in the budget in the first place.
Unfortunately, we have reached the point in our program for our last and final comments, and it looks like we have two. We have three, but we have time. So let's go for it. Do other counties, et cetera, have a less difficult means for the average citizen to request an audit?
In terms of requesting an audit, anyone in any county could go to a member of the Board of Supervisors and request an audit. So I don't see that as a problem.
This one I'm not clear about, so again, if someone in the audience could help me. How can one or more supervisors stop your firm from looking at something? Describe the process prior to your first looking at something.
Any member of the board can request that we do a management audit. That has to be approved by a motion of the board on a 6-5 vote, so it's a majority vote. So it the only way it can be stopped is if a majority of the board does not want the audit.
Before we ask the last question, I know there are people from Harvey's firm here tonight and family, so I thought we would take a minute for you to meet
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. We have the three of the four partners. We have the managing partner, Fred Brousseau, Fred, and his wife, Ruth.
Are you going to stand up and let us see you and clap for you? Thank you.
Incidentally, we are recommending the elimination of Fred's position at 8 o'clock tonight. So if you have any questions you want to ask Fred, if you could do it prior to 8 o'clock, we'd really appreciate it.
Does he then get to go to work for the Board of Supervisors?
Okay. And Steve Foti and Diane.
Great.
By the way, and Severin Campbell. These are the people that really do the work. I am a figurehead. They give me these reports, and I pretend like I know what I'm doing.
But he's really good on football, let me tell you. Okay, so now we're down to, oh, my gosh. Okay. Every time I say we're down to our last question, we get another question. All right, let me get this straight now. Do you see any process or procedure of the SF Board of Supervisors which blindsides board members to spend unjustifiably? For example, forbidding public comment on an item including $36 million contracted sole source by the Public Health Department with no overall plan. Because it's a three-minute... No, this one I do understand. Because it's a three-member Budget and Finance Committee decision.
That subject is well beyond the pay grade of the budget analyst. That is totally up to the Board of Supervisors. We don't weigh in on how much time the public gets to testify or to protest or whatever.
And I know,
I might add, yeah. The last department in the city that I am ever going to audit is the Board of Supervisors. That will be my last audit.
It's his gateway to heaven, if there's a heaven, right? I know some people are probably in the audience have been frustrated by being able to give testimony and it's limited to 2 minutes or 3 minutes. Having to say what you need to say often is very difficult in a 2 minute time period or a 3 minute time period. So, and I know that sometimes happens when either whether it's a budget committee or the board itself. So I have a feeling that that's something that a lot of people experience is that limit. Okay, this is your last call. Last call for any more questions, and we're down to our last question. More questions? These have been really wonderful questions. Thank you very much, and I have certainly learned a lot. Okay, we have one more. That way we get it on tape for them. Okay, the question is, can you comment on bankruptcies that are happening in other cities other than San Francisco, the process?
In our state.
I mean, there's no question that some cities are having a problem, and they have to meet their labor agreements. A way to, in some instances, being able to avoid fulfilling the obligations under those labor agreements is to declare bankruptcy to reduce costs. Interesting that we, as you know, Vallejo, the city of Vallejo was one of the cities that declared bankruptcy, and we were called in on that situation by the union to evaluate the situation, and we did advise the city council there that there were I believe millions of dollars, I don't remember the exact sums, of monies that were available to assist the city. But the decision was nevertheless determined to be a bankrupt situation, and that's what happened.
All right, this truly is the next to last question. How or why do the restaurants and wholesalers on Fisherman's Wharf pay such little rent when it's prime waterfront real estate? I understand these are 99-year leases.
You know, I mentioned to you that I am so old, I knew Baskin-Robbins when they only had two flavors. But that's even older than me. That was before my time when those 99-year leases were awarded. And I think it's a good question, but it was before my time, and there's nothing I or probably anyone can do about that.
Does anyone know how much longer those leases have to go? I mean, maybe 99 years is up. I didn't know about those leases. That's interesting. Yeah. All right. This indeed is from our audience, and it is the very last question that I've been holding on to. What have been the greatest satisfactions and frustrations experienced during your career?
Well, the greatest... Let me start with the frustration. I was certainly frustrated when I was fired as the Auditor General, for doing my job, for, so to speak, being naive and reporting the facts regardless of where the chips might fall. That was a frustration, but it, as it turned out, it was the best thing that could have happened to me because I came back to San Francisco, and we are where we are today. As far as satisfaction, nothing is more satisfying to me than what I delivered to you tonight in my speech, and that is that we continue to maintain our total independence and objectivity. And while we are the budget analyst, we always will.
Our thanks to Harvey Rose for all his work for us in San Francisco. We know how important it is for an independent analysis to, an analyst to survive the politics of the city. It's never easy. We also want to thank the audiences here on radio, television, and the Internet. I'm Ann Clark in this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than 110 years of enlightened discussion in the know, is adjourned.